1972.
Did you, all kidding aside, I mean, obviously growing up in your household, were you hanging around the set a lot and learning the craft at a young age, or were you separated from that?
Yeah, I don't know if I was learning the craft at such a young age, although I did do the clapboard as a kid, as my dad was like, oh, I'm there. It's okay, scene two, you know, whatever, it's very cute. But yeah, I mean, I was growing up. My parents got divorced when I was pretty young, and that was kind of, my dad did a lot of work in the 80s. Kind of was just like one after another. Now he's a little bit more, I think, about quality and less quantity, but he's always been kind of a workaholic. So my brother and I spent a lot of time on the set, and that was how we got to kind of hang out.
How much do you feel he influenced you as an actor and then now as a director?
You know, I mean, of course there's always an influence there. I mean, I don't know how much. I mean, I don't know how you measure that, really. But I think, obviously, getting into acting and just being in movies in general, I don't think I would have probably done that unless it would have been for him. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain level of comfort where I feel kind of at home, you know, whereas most people go on a set and they may be like, oh, this is really kind of awkward. But to me, that feels really natural. I don't know, which is awkward in itself. But it, you know, it does. It's just, it feels, you know, I've known, particularly he likes to work with a lot of the same people, and I was fortunate enough to work with some of the people that he works with on a regular basis. So I've, for instance, my DP, Tom Stern, I've known him since I was 9. So, you know, he's watched me grow up and run around. And so, I mean, they're kind of like my family. I think that's a huge influence when you get to kind of grow up, and it's kind of infused in your body.
Did you ask your dad for any advice for this?
I didn't. I didn't really ask him for advice, and he's not really one to. He's not a big advisor, and he's not a big talker. He did when the film got greenlit, and it was gonna. You know, I was gonna go ahead and actually do it. He did invite me to come out and watch him work. He was working on the Iwo Jima movie. And so I was really fortunate enough to be able to go out and just as, not as, okay, the daughter coming to visit or the actor or anything, but just a person that got to kind of come and be the fly on the wall and watch him work and the focus on the inner workings of you know, filmmaking. So that was, he kind of showed me by example, as opposed to sitting down and talking. And I think he's always been very kind of choosy about his words and always been very particular about not saying too much. But so I think he was more about setting, you know, an actual physical example as opposed to, you know, just kind of talking about stuff.
And coming from, obviously, his influence, do you think it's been difficult to kind of create your own identity, or, you know, like, do people compare you, like, do you feel like you're living in his image, or have you kind of broken out on your own?
I don't know. I mean, I don't, honestly, I try not to think about it too much. I mean, I think you make yourself crazy when you deal with that. I mean, you always get the questions, and you always get comparisons, or you always get, you know, this or that, help or hindrance, how is it, what is it? But at the end of the day, you know, I just kind of do what I do, and I try my best. And you know, there are good, you know, there are helpful parts to it, and there are hindrances to, you know, kind of living in the shadow or kind of being constantly associated with somebody. But you know, I don't think about it too much, because I think if you do, then you're not really focusing on what you're doing. So.
And for this film, you initially started out more in a role of a producer, mm-hmm. and then became more of a director. And did you always want to be a director, or did you not really realize that?
No, I mean, it wasn't, you know, everyone was kind of like, well, you know, you're going to direct, or, you know, because it kind of, okay, in the natural progression. I knew I always wanted to be involved in films. I knew I wanted to develop projects and either produce or act or whatever. The directing kind of came to me through the script. I mean, I always, unfortunately, kind of do things backwards. So I found the script, and after working on it with the writer and kind of developing it for a couple of years and shopping it around, really, the script really inspired me to want to direct. I kind of all of a sudden started visualizing this film, and it just kind of, it actually became annoying where I was dreaming about it, and you know, it was just kind of there, and I was completely kind of just enveloped in this script and the story, and it got to the point where I was like, I got to get this out of my head. I've got to get it kind of, you know, I've got to do this. And it was kind of like I had to do this. I don't know why. It was just a driving thing, and that's how I kind of came to want to direct it. Was because of, you know, being inspired by the process of developing material.
Why did you choose not have as much rehearsal before filming? I heard that was one of your techniques, and I was intrigued by that.
I'm not big on rehearsal, only because unless you're rehearsing something technical where you're dealing with a lot of different, you know, kind of movement or something in a scene or action or something. But I think unless you're doing a play and you're setting it up and you've got 6 to 8 weeks and you're going to flush out everything and you're maybe dealing with classical material, I'm not big on rehearsal because I think that there's a certain spontaneity and there's something magical about the awkwardness of not knowing what you're going to do. I think if you already have everything planned out and you've rehearsed it, then it's not fresh. It's not. I think some of the most wonderful moments in films have been, you know, the mistakes or the flubs or the ad-libs or the, you know, the things that weren't planned, you know, because film, you capture all these things that you don't even necessarily see with the eye on film, and those subtle things, those awkward moments that aren't rehearsed or aren't planned are sometimes the most beautiful.
So during a scene, I'm sorry, so when you're in a scene, is it possible, with Kevin, was there something that maybe didn't go exactly, it didn't feel right, and at that time, can you make an adjustment? Or does somebody like Kevin ever say, maybe we should try it this way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that they probably came on to the project with a first-time director is because before we started shooting, I mean, I think I gave them both a really good sense that I was willing to work with them. I mean, when you have great people, you have to trust them. You know, you have to trust that if something doesn't make sense or if something's not going well or something just doesn't quite, you know, isn't working well, that you've got to be able to go, okay, you know, how can we make this work, you know? And, you know, there was dialogue in the script or something that was going on, and, you know, I'm willing to be very pliable. I think you have to ride a little bit of a fence when it comes to directing. I think you don't want to be a dictator, and you don't want to be like, this is the way it has to be, but you want to have a good sense of where you're going, but you also have to be, okay, let's, you know, not everything's going to work out the way you've planned it out in your head, so you have to be open to collaborating with your actors and with your DP and with your camera, you know, operator. And I mean, everyone has great ideas. I mean, I think at the end of the day, you kind of have to choose what works for you. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely a very much a collaboration, and you know, I'm willing to try anything, you know, as long as it makes sense for the story and the characters.
But for the most part, you do stick to the script, right?
For the most part, yeah. But, it, you know, again, I don't want to offend the writer or anyone who's a writer because there is, you know, you have to be respectful of the story and what these people have done. But I think it's also important to say, if something's not working, let's just cut it. Let's figure out how to make it work and do it.
No rehearsal part. Obviously, Kevin and Marcia are seasoned actors. The boy Danny.
Miles. Incredible.
How did that go with being the first time actor, first time director, and then trying to do the no rehearsals? How did that?
Well, we didn't do any. We basically did a read through, and then we spent maybe a day or two, and it was more just working on some scenes, just to make sure that they made sense and that everyone knew where their characters were kind of going. It worked fine with Miles. I mean, you know, I think there was a couple people, particularly some of the producers, that were worried that he hadn't really done anything. So they were like, I don't know about this. Should we hire them? And this is a lot for a kid to do in a film, particularly his first one. And I felt confident. I mean, I felt when I saw him on audition and when we worked a little bit in rehearsal or read-throughs that he was going to pull it off just fine. And I think he did a great job. So it, you know, but it's, you know, with one of those things, you feel really confident about certain things, and then other things you're like, oh my God, I don't know if this is going to work. But I, you know, my actors were one thing that I felt were solid, no matter how much experience they had.
You obviously made a conscious decision in this film not to put yourself in it. You know, you come from the background of being an actor here. And
I made a little. I passed through. I was an extra.
Did you notice that?
I did not notice.
Is that because you were short on extras, or you wanted to?
No, I wanted to. It was my little Hitchcock
Which
moment.
Scene was that?
Oh, no, I'm not going to tell you. There's a scene right after they are in Venice, and the little dance, and they go take Davy to the beach, and I have a skull cap on, and my hands are, I'm the perpetrator. I walk through the, I'm being brought through the Hollywood police station as Marin Hinkle comes in to put poster of Davy up.
Okay.
And then I was also the train engineer's, the woman's voice, Wanda, who's talking to Eugene Bird.
Okay.
Yeah. So I managed to make it in there. I wasn't necessarily
cool.
an actor, but I did one voiceover, and I did pass through the, you know, you see me, and some people have gone, was that you? And I'm like,
cool.
Yeah.
Why did you make the choice not to actually be in, you know, Ben Affleck's coming out now in Gone Baby Gone. He did not want to be an actor specifically, so that Woody Allen obviously does a lot. Why did you not want to be?
Well, first of all, I felt first time director, you know, I really wanted to focus on what I was doing.
You had enough on your plate.
I had a lot on my plate, and I already felt a tremendous pressure to begin with, and I didn't want to have to be like certifiably insane by the time I finished the project. I wanted to still be able to go home and, like, you know, function as a human being. So, and honestly, I didn't think there was a role for me that was really right anyway. I wanted to just be able to watch and not have to deal with that. And I think, you know, look, my dad's done it where he's been able to pull off the acting, directing, producing. And then there's been a few films where I thought that it probably would have maybe served him better if he had just directed or acted. And I think that it can be a great thing to do, and it can also be, I think, not such a great thing to do. I think it just depends on the project, and it depends on you know, the people you've got around you, because it's hard to be objective, and all of a sudden you're kind of running and doing this, and then you're coming back and doing that, and I think it's a lot to take on, and I think it's hard to do, and you've got to be really up for it.
Was there anything unexpected that happened during filming? Anything totally unexpected in any part of the filming? Power outages, or just actors not showing up, or anything?
No. No, actually, I know that maybe would sound really great, but no.
That's everything. A Hollywood snitch question.
It actually went really well, and it went really smoothly, mm-hmm. and I had a couple people come and visit the set who have been around the business, and they couldn't believe that this was my first time, and they couldn't believe how, you know, efficient and how well run the set was, and how calm and peaceful. And, you know, I think one time, you know, like, the boom operator got pissed at somebody and yelled at them, and I was like, you can't do that. I'm like, we're all here, we're all working, and, you know, and that was like the most tense moment on the set, was that, you know, the still photographer got yelled at by the boom operator. And I put it, you know, and I very kindly took him aside, and I said, you know, we don't need that kind of tension. Uh-huh. And that was the most tense it ever got,
right.
You know. But that's important to me, that you don't have crazy, chaotic
right.
moments. I mean, you know, you're dealing with heavy subject matter. It's very disrespectful to the actors, because they're trying to, you know, put it out there and do good work. And I think if you have a chaotic set or a lot of weird, unexpected things happening, you're just making their job that much harder.
And I hope you don't mind me asking that. I was just curious.
No, You mean like a light fell on somebody's head or something?
Well, no, just kind of what you said, how you reacted to certain things.
Yeah.
I've met people that have directed for the first time, and like, oh, yeah, I can't believe the first time I ever directed. this happened and that happened.
Yeah.
So I was just curious.
No, I mean, I, you know, I said after I finished the movie, I was like, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to, like, relive this experience because it really went so smoothly.
About the subject matter, have you ever seen the HBO series, Tell Me You Love Me?
I watched a little bit the other night. I haven't really seen it too much.
It's a hot topic right now, you know, love and marriage, and there's been so much divorce over the years, and, you know, it's like, I've been watching that HBO show with my wife, and I think it's a very important topic because this generation is a lot different with love and work and with marriage than, you know, grandparents' generation.
Right.
So I think it's kind of timely to be touching on something that's pretty important. You know, what do you think is the statement of something like that coming out today, as opposed to, you know, 50 years ago when that was very different?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, with any relationship that people get disconnected. I mean, that's the whole point of the film, is that these two people are completely disconnected and, you know, going in opposite directions on different tracks, for lack of a better analogy, and they're kind of just separating. And, you know, I think that you can, just it's a matter of being willing to, you know, not give up and to somehow find your way back and struggle through it. And that's what life is about. It's always a struggle. And even through adversity and tragedy and terrible circumstances, you know, sometimes those are the moments, those tragic moments and the terrible things that happen to us are actually the things that bring people back together. And that, you know, that's kind of sad, but, it, you know, however you get there, thank God you got there, you know, just find your way back. I think, that's what I, one of the things that drew me to this subject matter in this particular story was I like the fact that people can come back together and find their way back together through really kind of awful circumstances, you know, because that's the way life is, you know.
Now, there was obviously heavy emotion in this movie. It's probably one of the most moving I've seen since Terms of Endearment, probably, as far as gut-wrenching, mm-hmm. tear-jerking scenes.
Yeah.
And I'm saying this as a guy, so
yeah.
I can imagine when the women get...
Oh, yeah.
It'll be ugly.
It's a mucus festival.
Oh, now, my question is, on the set, and this is Hollywood Snitch, you know, was there, during the scenes, I always wondered, is there dry eyes everywhere, or is there... is there people just sobbing on the set as you record, or so, are you so used to the material that it doesn't affect
you?
No,
I mean, that's a good question in the sense that, I mean, you know, we still manage to have a lot of laughs. I mean, you know, I'm in a boys' club, and I'm surrounded by all these guys, and, you know, they all want to laugh, and they all want to have a good time, even though we're still making a movie and it's serious. But, yeah, I mean, pretty much there was about two times, I think, where I remember saying to Steve Campanelli, the camera operator, I said, you know, it was the scene where Davey was saying goodbye to Marsha's character. And we're all sitting there, you know, and I'm watching it, and I'm getting all welled up, and this kid's tears are like rocks falling out of his face onto the, and I mean, it was just... And I, when we cut, you know, I said to Steve, I was like, well, how'd it look? He goes, I don't know. He goes, I have to clean my eyepiece out. He totally had like a little well of tears in his eyepiece. And I mean, you know, that didn't happen that often, but there was a couple times where we were all just like, oh my God. I mean, you know, nobody was like sobbing, but everyone was very misty-eyed a few times. And yeah, but then there's other times where, you know, we're like, and cut, and everyone's laughing hysterically, and it's not even something funny. It's just that I think you need that sometimes. You know, you find times that you need to let go of that amount of tension, so you just start laughing about stupid things, or you joke, and because it's hard. It's hard to shoot that and to stay in that kind of emotional space for days on end, you know, because you're just like, oh my God, you know, please, you know, someone make a fart joke or something, you know, anything, you know, something.
The scene where Miles is banging his head against the wall out of feeling that guilt, seeing all these people dying around him. I mean, how does one prepare a child that young for a scene like that? I mean,
well, that was kind of interesting because we weren't supposed to shoot that scene that day, and we were a little ahead of schedule, and I said, you know, it would be great because we're shooting most of the stuff in one house.
Yeah.
I said, what do you guys think? And I know you haven't prepared this scene for today, but I actually was kind of glad because I wanted them to not have thought about it too much because it was a heavy scene. So I kind of sprung it on them, and thank God they both could have refused, but they kind of were game for it, and we ended up shooting it just on the fly. And I think things work out the way they're supposed to work out, and they happen for a reason. So that was one of those things that was unexpected and just kind of was like, all right, let's just do it. Let's not think about it. And again, I mean, they didn't know their lines that much. I said, well, you know what you're supposed to be saying, so get the lines down as best as you can, but don't worry about them. Just say whatever you would say in the midst of what's going on. And so they managed to actually, you know, stay pretty much within the writing, but they, you know, just kind of went for it. So,
I was trying to imagine myself, if I was Kevin Bacon, I was driving that train, and I was put in that decision, you know, I had to make a split-second decision that would affect the rest of my life, and maybe kill this woman, and affect the entire train, what would I do? And I don't know, but what would you do?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you don't know. I mean, there's kind of it's kind of a strange thing, because you kind of think, I mean, there's so many emotions, you know, you're like, first of all, you're pissed that somebody's doing this, you know, and putting you in that position. So there's a certain amount of, well, screw this person, you know, I have to take care of my responsibility, and that this person is, so there's, you know, a lot of emotions going on, and I don't know what I would do. I probably would have done the same thing, you know. I think you make your job, and you know what your job entails, and you have a certain responsibility to it, and you've got to do what you think is right. And it's like, you know, do you injure the masses, or do you deal with the person that's in front of you, you know, that one person, or the chance of, you know, the hundreds of passengers and having a huge accident and derailing. And I mean, remember that train accident in Maryland where two trains collided? Back in the 80s or something. But, you know, I mean, the one guy who was driving one train saw that they were on the same track. It was some screw-up. And, you know, that guy managed to, you know, to do something that, you know, saved a couple hundred people, as opposed to what he could have done, which would have, the trains would have gone completely into each other. I mean, there's all these little things. You know, you kind of have to decide, you know, how am I going to do this without it being, you know, the worst-case scenario, you know, kind of. I don't know. It's tough.
And on one hand, trains seem to kind of only make the news when there's, like, an accident. But on the other hand, Kevin Bacon was saying, I thought it was interesting, that there's a certain romance to trains.
Yeah, there is. I mean, you know, it is actually a really beautiful way to travel, and there is something, you know, kind of lovely about it. I mean, you know, trains back in the day were, like, the way to go, and these beautiful steam trains. And yeah, I mean, it has kind of lost, you know, now that we have airplanes and everyone has their cars and their, like, DVD players and their cars and all this stuff, and people don't even think about it, but it is kind of a lovely way to go, and you know, and you don't hear about it, and you don't often hear about the way the accidents happen too. I mean, they're usually like one little thing in the corner of the newspaper, and they don't really publicize the fact that people do, you know, throw themselves in front of trains or park on the track. Right before we started shooting, there was an incident in Glendale in Southern California where this guy had parked on the tracks, and then he pulled the ultimate, you know, kind of bonehead maneuver and jumped out of the car before, because he pushed out and then jumped out of the car, but the Metrolink train hit his Ford Explorer and derailed, and 8 people died. But he is now, you know, he's now in jail they actually charged him with murder. So, you know, in that kind of case, you're like, well, it would have been far more noble if he had gone down with the train, you know? Yeah, I mean, come on, you go and do that, and then you end up killing 8 people, and you don't even, you know, die. I mean, come on.
That was right before filming?
Yeah, that was within, I think, 6 months before we started filming. As soon as we were still, you know, working on the script, and we were shopping around, and then we had this huge incident happen, and...
kind of like an omen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those kind of things happen, you know. And then a guy came up to me after we showed it in Toronto, and he said, you know, my nephew was just killed by a train. He was walking, you know, just walking along the tracks. He's a teenager. He has his iPod on real loud and listening to, like, rap music, and he didn't hear the train coming. The train just clipped him, and, you know. So you don't, there's a lot of things that go on with people with accidents and suicides and things that happen, and it's not necessarily something that they want to, you know, talk about. But it does happen a lot.
For the casting process, were you involved with everybody, even for one or two lines? Did you see everybody that was going to speak?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I wanted to be involved with everybody. You know, fortunately, it wasn't a huge production. I mean, I don't know if I could say that if it was going to be like, you know, 50 roles, but there, you know, for pretty much everyone, yeah, I was very involved.
What was the budget?
It was just under $8 million, about, I think, 7.5 or 7.6.
And for you, what would feel satisfying in terms of, you know, what are the results? Is it if it makes money? You know, what? How do you judge?
People see it. You know, I don't know. You know, look, if you spend $50 million on a movie, I'm sure you want to make your money back. I don't think the studio and myself, I didn't make it to make money. I made it because I thought it was a touching, emotional story, and I wanted to tell it. And I think the important thing for me is that if people see it and they can relate to it at all, or if it resonates at all with them, you know, if it reminds them of their humanity at all, or they can have a laugh or a cry or be touched on any level, that's what's important to me. I think that's what good storytelling is all about.
What did your father say when he saw it?
He said he liked it.
But yeah. Was he being nice? Or was he being honest?
No. I think he genuinely thinks I did a good job, and I think he's proud. And you know, obviously, you know, it's one of those things where you know you want your parents to be proud of you, particularly when you're kind of doing the same thing they do. But yeah, I think he liked it, and you know, he definitely was. Kind of helpful from afar. I showed it to him when I kind of first assembled it, and you know, he was like, "Well, there's a couple of scenes you could, you know, edit down." Uh-huh. So, and I was like, "Oh, really?" So, you know, but it
because that would be hard for him to kind of give you feedback without trying to give you.
Yeah, but he's pretty good about that. I mean, you know, he said to me, you know, I'll give you if you want, and I'll give you, you know, some of my ideas, and if you like them, great, and if you don't, that's fine too. So, you know, because that, again, it's everyone's going to have their own ideas. But, you know, I know there's a few things that he suggested editing-wise that when I was working on it that were great. And then there was a few things where I was like, oh, I don't agree. And then that was it. You know, end of story.
How about future going forward? Any collaboration in the works? Maybe a father-daughter movie or
God.
A co-directing?
That would really push me over the edge.
It'd be touching.
Come on, we all know what it's like to work with our dads.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there's any on Golden Pond Part 2 coming. I'm not really sure.
Exactly. Had to be asked. You never know, you know.
I don't know. I love to work with him. You know, I worked with him when I was a kid and when I was in my 20s, and that was hard because, you know, I was younger and green, and I think as we've both gotten older, we're probably in a better space to do that. And I work with my family all the time anyway. My brother did the score, and, you know, my dad's worked with some of the kids in his other films, and I don't know, maybe.
Did you consider writing your own film, like writing?
No, I don't know if I'm a good writer. I don't know. I've kind of tried before, but I didn't. You know, I had like one, like I hit a wall one day, and I was like, that's it. It's like I'm very easily discouraged when it comes to things that I don't feel confident about, because I'm like, I've never written, and I never went to college, and you know, I kind of educated myself as far as, you know, going to. You know, taking singing lessons and dancing lessons and all this stuff, acting school, but I never went to like a university or had a proper education. So I don't know. I mean, I don't even speak English that well, so I don't know how well I could write.
You know, a ghostwriter, but now you've been on both sides of the camera, all right? So this is probably a question you get a lot or a tough question. been on both sides. Which side A is greener, and which side do you like better, or are they the same, or are you going to do the typical, I like both?
Well, I do like both, but I they're different, and I think for me, I'm going to pursue directing, because I find it to be a far more gratifying thing to do. I mean, I just, you know, I feel like you really get a full, you know, a full experience. You don't just kind of come on as a hired gun and then have no say in it. I really like the full process, from finding the material or working with a writer to, you know, the post-production and the sound mixing and the editing. And I really, that was a very gratifying experience. It's also scary as hell because you have no one else to blame if it doesn't turn out well, you know, and everything is kind of riding on you. But I think in the end, you really feel like you've accomplished something, as opposed to as an actor, you kind of go, oh, you know, that could have turned out better, or I wish it were different, or, you know, you kind of don't really get a lot of say in it. Just kind of hope for the best. It's always a gamble.
Have you been approached since you've done this film by other projects?
Yeah, I've had a lot of meetings and been working on stuff, but I have a feeling I'm going to end up finding my own stuff. I mean, I have a certain taste. I don't know what it is or how to describe it necessarily, but I have a certain kind of taste that I'm drawn to certain kind of odd stories. And I think I have a feeling I'm probably going to seek out my own projects and try and develop them, as opposed to being a hired gun. Because I don't know, not only that, but I was very fortunate with this film that they kind of left me alone. I didn't, because I stayed within the budget, because I got, you know, great actors and good crew, they didn't, you know, it wasn't like someone came in and, like, wanted to re-edit my film, or they wanted to tell me what to do, or I was kind of left alone, and I was really thrilled about that. And I'm not sure that I would work well within, like, a studio system. Because I'm just like, I don't, you know, that's one thing that my dad's been very fortunate in. I mean, he's managed to pick his own projects, and whether they're successful or not, he, you know, at least has been able to say, look, this is what I'm doing. And, you know, he doesn't have a lot of chefs in the kitchen trying to, you know, screw with his stuff. And I think that's the way I'd like to work. And if that means I have to do small films, that's fine. Because I'd rather do a small indie-type film and a smaller budget film and have someone leave me alone and I get to make the film I want to make, as opposed to going, oh, okay, I'm going to make this $100 million film, but then they're going to end up telling me, you know, who to cast and what to do and how to edit the film and how to, you know, and then
it's more like you're their pawn.
Yeah, I mean, you are, and I mean, you hear these horror stories about directors getting fired from their own projects or having it taken away, or somebody goes and they recut the film after, you know, and I mean, that just, then it's not worth it. I would rather.
It's kind of like you'd rather be a bigger fish in a smaller pond than a smaller fish.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And then hopefully if you, you know, do well and you can show that, you know, that you can make good films and make good choices, then you get to move up. You know, but I want to do that in the right way. I don't want to just kind of get hired. And I actually had an opportunity where they said, oh, there's a film, you know, and it had really good cast attached to it already. And it was kind of an interesting story, but it's shooting at the end of October. And they're like, well, are you interested in meeting on it? And I'm like, well, wait, they're already shooting, they're going to start shooting the film, and they don't have a director? I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. They already have a cast. I'm like, who's prepping the movie? You know, but they're shooting. Come October 26th, the movie's shooting. They're just going to find someone and plug that person in, and they're just going to direct this film. And I'm thinking, you know, this came up 3 weeks ago, at the end of September, you know, middle of September. I'm thinking, no, I'm not interested in meeting on them. And that's like a disaster. I'm like, how can that movie be that good? You're just going to throw all these people together, and nobody's going to have any time to really work with it or sit with it. And that's not the way I want to work.
Can I ask? Is that okay?
Go for it.
You didn't get to ask
go
the
for
question.
It.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I write for my college paper. It's a film school. And would you have any advice for aspiring filmmakers looking to make their first feature-length movie?
Well, I mean, I think going to film school and taking acting class, I think all that is really helpful. I think if there's any way that students can find their way, you know, onto a set or work in a stage production, or I think to me, being in that environment is really a great education. Because I think you can sit in a classroom all day, and that's extremely helpful in certain regards, but if you can try and get out there and find a way to let someone, you know, have you come on the set and to see great people and work around great people, it was you know, completely the best thing that could have happened to me. And I think, you know, I if you can just find your way without being arrested onto a great set or to somehow spend the day, you know, just picking someone's brain that's somebody you respect and admire.
So go to school would be an extra too.
Go to school, but, you know, find your way to surround yourself or even just be close to some really great people.
And experience whether they're is famous. More valuable than any classes.
Yeah. I mean, I think so. Hmm. I mean, I think there's a lot of value to classes, but I think there's something to trying, you know, just kind of being around people, whether they're famous or not. Hmm. Just, you know, surround yourself with talented people and surround yourself with passionate people and try and spend as much time in the field, you know? Right. Yeah, on the battlefront, on the front lines.